From WABE in Atlanta, this is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for joining us for our daily look at the arts and culture of Atlanta. Today, we're going to be examining two very different theatrical experiences. True Colors Theater Company's artistic director, Kenny Leon, is joining us this hour to talk about Holler If You Hear Me, a musical based on the lyrics of rapper Tupac Shakur. I'll speak with the newest correspondent on The Daily Show, Atlanta's own Dulce Sloan. And first, bringing the barnyard to the Center for Puppetry Arts. Charlotte the Spider and Wilbur the Pig are characters in a classic story of friendship. E.B. White's children's novel, Charlotte's Web, came out in 1952. And since that time, it's been adapted to films, a musical, a video game, and also a puppet show. The Center for Puppetry Arts opens Charlotte's Web next week, and we have puppeteers Amy Sweeney and Nicholas Carleo here in studio, along with some esteemed puppets themselves. Welcome to all of you.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's really a pleasure. Now, Amy, we've had you on before.
Yes.
But would you remind us?
It was actually for a show called Mighty Bug, where I played Scorpiana.
Scorpiana, the beautiful scorpion. Well, I guess she was a little bit evil, wasn't she?
Yeah, just a little bit.
As scorpions would be. But I was hoping you'd remind us about how you became a puppeteer.
Oh, well, actually, I became a puppeteer when I was in Orlando, Florida. I was living down there, and I worked for a wonderful company called the City of Orlando Puppet Troupe. It was a government-run puppet troupe.
Really?
Yeah, and we actually did shows for underprivileged children in different centers, and I got the bug there. I actually am.
So to speak.
Yeah. I actually am from Gainesville, Georgia. So there was an opportunity to come up here and audition for the Center for Puppetry Arts about 11 years ago. And I came up and got the job, and I have not left since.
Of course, the Center for Puppetry Arts, an international destination for all things puppetry. Nick, how are you introduced to puppetry?
Well, I was always interested when I was a kid in puppetry, naturally watching The Muppets and Sesame Street. I took one puppetry class in my undergrad, and in my first professional auditions in the Atlanta area, the Center for Puppetry Arts was so kind to ask me to audition for Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and I actually got to play Santa, and I've been doing that the past 2 years. And this is my first show that's not Christmas-themed.
Now, when you say you played Santa, you are meaning your puppet, correct?
Yes.
I love the identification. You know, this is method acting via puppets.
Oh, absolutely. I think with any sort of performance, to really kind of establish a character first and then let everything else kind of follow behind it, it really helps kind of lead everything. And it even transferred over to puppetry, which was very exciting.
Mm-hmm. So Charlotte's Web, how was this adapted for the puppet stage?
Well, this was many, many years ago. We actually did the first version. It was actually before my time there. And they adapted it in a style called Check Black, where we use a curtain of light out front and we use shadow behind it, and puppeteers dress in blacks from head to toe. So we disappear virtually behind the puppets. And I think it's just such a classic story that and it's full of animals and a beautiful message that it just needed to be made into a puppet show for our center.
And this time around, is it also shadow?
It's still Check Black. Yeah, Check Black. And we do use different varieties of puppets. We have rod puppets. We have something we call, sometimes it's called Bunraku, but we kind of call it teamwork puppetry, where you'll have three puppeteers on one puppet. And those are for a lot of the human characters and also for Templeton the Rat. We use three puppeteers.
Why are three required?
You usually have one that is the main character. They do the head, and then you have one on the arms and one on the feet, so all the limbs move. They become more, it becomes more real. You know, they look like they're actually there and they're actually alive.
Okay, I'm not sure I really want to know the answer because I believe they are real. But say in Muppets Take Manhattan, mm-hmm. were there three people in Miss Piggy?
No. Usually there's one or two. You know, they'll have somebody in the head, and sometimes they'll have somebody on the arms. But because you can actually see the feet of our puppet, we have someone on the feet as well.
So much detail. You have two of the puppets here in studio. Would you tell us, well, first, would you introduce your puppet alter egos and then tell us something about the mechanics of them?
Of course. Well, we have Wilbur here.
Hello, Wilbur.
Yes, hi there. We actually have three different Wilburs for the show, one when he's an infant. The one I brought here today is an adolescent, sort of a teenager. Then we have a very large, like, actually pig-sized puppet. And he's actually a hand-and-mouth puppet. So I'll put my hand inside where his little mouth is, and I can flap him around and lip sync with the dialogue. And he has two rods connecting his front legs and his back legs, so I can move them and make it really look like he's actually running around or sitting down or leaping.
And he has some leaping to do.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because it gets a little scary there. He's adorable.
Now,
hey, tell us some more. Who are some more hand-and-mouth puppets? Famous ones.
Well, naturally, we have Kermit the Frog, and most of your Muppets are varying on hand and mouth and rods for the arms.
And a lot of Jim Henson puppets are the hand and mouth puppets. And ours, actually, you have, like Nick says, we have the hand and the mouth, but you also are able to move the legs as well. And Wilbur always... Well, usually, sometimes you have a helper, but usually it's just Nick behind this gigantic pig for most of the show, and he makes him look so alive and so wonderful.
So long as you don't think about being a butcher.
Right.
This never would enter your mind.
Of course not.
No. Now, could you give us some more behind-the-scenes information? You've told us about some of the mechanics. Mm-hmm. What is the rehearsal process like?
We have about 3 weeks that we do the rehearsal process, and that's when we're learning the scripts. It is kind of like a basic theater show where you learn the scripts, you learn your lines, you learn the blocking, but you add the layer of puppetry and making these creatures alive, which does take quite a bit. And working with a light line, the Check Black style, is very tricky because you want to stay out of the light as much as you can.
Sure.
So we're always in these interesting positions, you know, like hunched down, or even Nick's on a rolling cart for most of the show. So we're always in these positions to just stay in the shadow so you can really pay attention to the puppets.
Okay, now this sounds similar to singing and dancing while acting.
Yes.
I mean, you have choreography,
mm-hmm.
and you also must be, you know, using parts of your body that don't necessarily correspond to the action in the way that singing and dancing would.
Right.
Did this part of your craft take a long time to master?
I guess I've been doing Check Black since I started the center because it's one of their favorite styles there. It did take a long time to just realize where you needed to put your body mm-hmm. in order to stay out of the light. But the choreography, it's like learning a dance. You know, we get a lot of practice. We do about 8 hours a day for 6 days a week
and
practice.
And you do multiple shows a day?
Yes, yeah.
We you must do. Be exhausted.
Yeah, 2 to 3 shows a day, yeah, depending on the day, yeah. It's exhausting, but it's really rewarding.
Oh, well, if you are just joining us, I'm speaking with puppeteers Amy Sweetie and Nicholas Carleo, who appear in the Center for Puppetry Arts upcoming production of Charlotte's Web. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support for WABE comes from California Closets, with designers available for consultations in-home or in the California Closet showrooms in Buckhead, Alpharetta, Lawrenceville, and now open in the East Cobb, offering storage solutions for every decor. CaliforniaClosets.com. And from the Zuckerman Museum of Art, presenting the exhibition Medium. Everyone has a ghost story. What's yours? Reception September 16th. You can learn more at zuckerman.kennesaw.edu.
We're back with City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's Choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for listening. My guests are puppeteers Amy Sweeney and Nicholas Carleo, talking about the Center for Puppetry Arts production of Charlotte's Web, which opens on Tuesday. Like all of your productions, this will features some performances specifically for children with autism. Mm-hmm. How are those productions different from the others?
What we do is we actually work with the sound, and we usually take the sound down a couple levels. This show is so sweet and gentle, mm-hmm. that we don't have to do a lot of work on this show. A lot of times we'll have to change the lights a little bit, make things not as startling.
Sure.
But what we really want to do is we make a safe space, a space where you just feel like you can watch the show, you can enjoy it. If you need to leave the theater for any reason, you can come in and out. So that's what we really aim to do. And we also have extra activities during that day as well that people can do.
Have there been any experiences related to some of the autism productions that were particularly moving or remarkable that you've heard about or even experienced yourself?
I've done several of them, and the audiences after are so appreciative. It brings a tear to your eye.
Sure.
Because it's just, you feel the love. And also, there's a lot of dancing. If you have music in the show, there's a lot of getting up and dancing and moving around and just experiencing it on a different level, and it's so lovely to see. Yeah, I mean, I just remember doing, we did Space, and that was a big musical rock show, you know, and just people jumped up out of their seats and started just getting down, and it was so much fun to see that. So.
I'm thinking it could be educational to take some of the people who attend the regular performance and then bring them in to observe.
Yes.
The autism performance. It could be very instructive for children attending.
Absolutely. I think to kind of destigmatize that whole the whole autism spectrum and heavily ADHD kids is very important, and I love what the center is doing, just making it all inclusive.
Yes, very much so. Well, we were talking about how many examples there are in children's literature of animals dying, and for that matter, in fairy tales, you know, humans dying. Charlotte's Web is in this category. What do you think kids learn from these stories?
I believe they learn about the life cycle of, I mean, especially Charlotte. I mean, a spider does not live very long.
I know.
And E.B. White actually, he wrote this lovely note to his publishers because the publishers were a little nervous about, you know, publishing a story where the main heroine is a spider. They thought it would scare people. So he wrote them this note about why he wrote it. And he said, I had a spider in my barn, and I watched her make her egg sac. And I couldn't leave her there. I was leaving for New York, and I couldn't leave her there. So he very gently got the egg sac and the spider into a candy box and took it with him to New York and put it in a drawer. And he said a few weeks later, he opened that drawer, and he saw the babies come out, and they spun, like, webs on everything he owned, like the combs and the nail clippers and everything. He was like, it's such a beautiful sight. And you know, the spider... Spiders do die after they do that. So he just wanted to, you know, he's like, it's a life cycle, but it's a gentle telling about the life cycle.
Yes. And Amy, listeners can't see, but you have a beautiful baby bump.
Yeah.
I imagine this could be very emotional for you in this story.
It is. I do play Charlotte. I would like to say this is the second time I've played Charlotte pregnant.
It's not like 7 year locust. Different bumps.
It's kind of funny, yeah. But I'm 7 months pregnant right now, and playing Charlotte, you know, not only dealing with her death, but the fact that she'll never meet her children. You know, she says it. She's like, I will never see my children. And it's just, it's heartbreaking, but it's the cycle of life for a spider.
Listen, I still haven't gotten over the movie Babe when he sees his parents on that breakfast plate with the eggs.
It just gets you.
Yes. Now, Charlotte's Web is essential children's literature, but it also has tremendous appeal for adults. You often hear it referenced among authors, among book lovers. Why do you think that's so?
Well, I think just the scope of what E.B. White was able to achieve in such a small novel. I still remember reading it in my fourth grade English class. And the fact that he's able to take these potentially very difficult topics and present them gently, but also not talking down to an audience, it really leaves a very big impression.
Mm. The Center for Puppetry Arts has so much rich year-round programming beyond the performances. Next week, a celebration of Jim Henson's birthday, which ought to be a national holiday. What can visitors get in addition to the performances when they go and see Charlotte's Web?
So if you get a ticket to see the show, or if you get a ticket to see the museum, you get to take part of that celebration. We have a bouncy house. We're going to have birthday cake. You can make your very own fantastic puppet friend. You can also put your name in for drawing for great Jim Henson prizes. We have a lot of stuff going on that weekend.
And all year round, with kudos to you and everyone at the center. Amy Sweeney and Nicholas Carleo are two of the puppeteers in the Center for Puppetry Arts production of Charlotte's Web. That opens next Tuesday and runs through October 22nd. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Chin up, chin up. Everybody loves a happy face. Wear it, share it. It'll brighten up the darkest place. Twinkle, sparkle, let a little sunshine in. You'll be on the right side looking at the bright side. Up with your chinny chin chin.
Support for WABE comes from the Georgia Legal Services Program, Georgia Cares Program. Medicare beneficiaries with more than one chronic condition may qualify for connected care with a personal health care professional. Additional information found at mygeorgiacares.org. And from Zoo Atlanta, presenting Sippin' Safari on Saturday, September 23rd, featuring an evening of wine sampling, live music, and more for ages 21 and up. Tickets and information available at zooatlanta.org.
This is City Lights on WABE, where ATL meets NPR. I'm Lois Reitz. It's great to be with you. Atlanta's own Dulce Sloan is the newest correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. She made her debut last week. I spoke with the comedian by phone about her recent success and what she has planned for her time on The Daily Show. Could you tell us about your early life in comedy here in Atlanta? I know you frequented Laughing Skull.
Yeah, the Laughing Skull is my home club. I actually started stand-up because I took the comedy class at the Laughing Skull. And it was because another comic, Big Kenny, who taught the class, I'd met him 2 years before at the Funny Farm, just hanging out with a friend. And he told me that I needed to pursue stand-up because I was a comic. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I avoided him for 2 years. And then I just kept running into him, and he finally got me to take a stand-up class.
Stand-up is so scary to people who don't, well, I should say, for some of us, who could never imagine doing it. It seems so scary because you're so very exposed. Were there feelings of self-consciousness that you had to overcome in learning to do stand-up?
Definitely, because I had been doing theater since I was a child. So stand-up was scary to me because, you know, when you're in a play, you're not yourself and those aren't your words. And when you're doing stand-up, it's only you. You know, I've been on stage before as an actor where it was just me, where I was either singing or doing a monologue. But stand-up is just you, and it's all you, and it's all of your personality, and those are all of your words. So people aren't only just judging what you're saying, they're also judging you as a person, and that scared me. But the advantage that I had was that since I was a theater performer, you know, a lot of people start stand-up, they have, you know, to get over a fear of just being on stage. I didn't have a fear of being on stage. So I already had a leg up over a lot of people when I started.
Right, but you don't have the security that improv actors have where, you know, there's the yes and someone you can always fall back on. I mean, you have got to be funny. Or you bomb. Or you may be funny and you're just surrounded by a lot of slow-witted people who don't get what you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly. Sometimes the crowd just doesn't. You know, I had, you know, a couple of jokes where I know it's going to take the crowd a second. So, you know, you give them, you know, you have that joke, you give them the second. A lot of comics are afraid of silence. And I had to learn to manipulate silence.
Interesting. We had Tig Notaro on a few weeks back, and she's also great with silence. I think that's a real accomplishment when you understand and you are in control of when the punchline should land or how you can help the audience get what you're trying to get across.
Yes, and I, you know, I had one of the best lessons I learned during stand-up. I was doing a show, and it was like a late Friday show, and the crowd was just real drunk and real loud, and, you know, I got on the stage and my instincts kind of kicked in. So a lot of the comics were trying to talk over the crowd, and what I did inversely to that was I dropped my voice. So I started speaking at a lower tone, and it made them be quiet because they were trying to listen to what I was saying. Because if I would have tried to match their volume, we would have just kept yelling over each other. But when someone whispers, you pay attention. When someone drops their voice down, you pay attention. So I kind of just learned, you know, if I can bring the focus in and just change the energy, then you can get a rowdy crowd a lot of times to calm down. But that comes from me having a lot of theater experience.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing how to control the crowd.
You got white women putting their hands in my afros. See a couple perpetrators in the room. Because they're not classy when they put their hand in your afro. They don't want to stay on the perimeter of the afro. She don't want to keep it Christian, no. She takes the whole hand, goes straight to the scalp, shake it back and forth, and then exit your afro with this jellyfish action. While she's looking at her friend going, Lauren, it's so soft.
Now the Daily Show. Can you tell us what the audition process was like?
The audition process for me was very simple and straightforward. You know, my manager and my agent contacted me and told me, you know, that Comedy Central wanted me to audition for the show. And I had to write and record an original piece and then record a piece that was written for me. And I filmed it on my phone and sent it in. And they liked it, and they flew me out to New York to audition in person. And I had to write a new piece. and then do the prepared piece they gave me in front of a green screen. And I sat down at the desk with Trevor. That was the first time I'd ever met him. Sat down at the desk with Trevor and did this desk piece as if I was already a correspondent.
Oh.
And that was the second audition. And they called me 2 hours later and told me I got the job.
Oh, that is amazing. He seems so sweet and so insanely smart. I remember hearing him interviewed first when his memoir came out, and I wondered, what's he really like, Dulce?
He's very sweet, he's very intelligent, and he's very generous. As a creative person and as, you know, this being his show, he always makes sure that whatever piece the correspondents are doing, that it's in their voice. So if we get something for the writers, we all can go through, you know, we sit down with the writers and edit and go, okay, that is something that I would say, that's something I wouldn't say. And so, you know, he looks over the pieces and he knows our voices as well. So he'll look through the piece and go, well, maybe we should change this. That doesn't sound like you. So he wants us to have the best show we possibly can. He wants to put on the best show that he possibly can. So he's very open and he's very supportive of the correspondents and the writing staff.
Mm. What was it like making your debut? I mean, it sounds like the process you went through in audition could just as well have been the debut if you were offered the job 2 hours later.
It took a while for it to sink in, because the good thing is we have a dress rehearsal with the piece, so the first time you do your first piece isn't when it's going to air. So I was, and I'm an old theater kid, so I love a dress rehearsal for anything. But the first time I did it, it was great because, you know, their audience is a different audience. It's a very intelligent audience, and they're a very attentive audience. So they want to hear the jokes. They want to hear what you have to say. So the first time I did it, it was great. The second time I did it, it was great. But to just get that much support from an audience and just to have them hang on your every word was an amazing feeling.
For more, please welcome to the show our newest Daily Show correspondent, Dulce Sloan, everybody.
Thanks, Trevor. Yes, it's Fashion Week. And while we'll see some new looks, some things will never change. For example, we know at least one model will fail at her only job, walking down the runway.
And well, you talked about fashion and cultural appropriation, which was hilarious. What other topics do you hope to cover on the show? Do you get to submit your topics, or do writers and Trevor assign them to you? How does that work?
We do get to pitch a topic that we're interested in or pitch a story that we're interested in. And what I want to do is I want to make sure that I have a balance in what I pitch. So I want to be able to have those, you know, very heavy political pieces, but I also want to do pieces that are just fun.
Well, what is so impressive about The Daily Show, and you alluded to it in speaking about the audience, but the fact that the correspondents are comedians and not journalists, as Jon Stewart used to have to remind people that he wasn't a journalist, yet you're making these very poignant and insightful comments about current events. What do you think comedy can do that a news outlet can't?
I think we can add a levity to a situation and also add a perspective. You know, we don't have to filter it through our political interests. We can filter it through finding the absurdity
yes.
in what's happening. And I think when people find the absurdity in it, or you can come at the opposite side of an issue, then you can really see both sides of it and get a better picture of what's actually happening, as opposed to, like, this is our agenda and this is what we're trying to push.
Dulce, we are so proud of you, cheering you on here in Atlanta, and wish you continued good luck and success on The Daily Show.
Thank you so much.
Dulce Sloan is the newest correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Up next, Kenny Leon and Todd Kreidler here to talk with us about Holler If You Hear Me. On stage now with True Colors.
Support for WABE comes from the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, inviting you to the annual Patient Education Symposium this Saturday at the Marriott Century Center, offering updates on treatments, nutrition, and surgery. Online at Crohn'sColitisFoundation.org.
In Florida right now, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is pretty popular.
I have seen a lot of positive things.
If I knew FEMA would be there.
And the power was up within a day, and it's been consistently everything back to normal.
The government is proactive. FEMA is even more accessible.
I'm Ari Shapiro. The lessons FEMA had to learn to effectively help those hurt by Hurricane Irma on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 4 to 6:30 on 90.1 WABE.
This is City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes. Tony Award-winning director Kenny Leon is back from the Berkshires and headed for Broadway with a revival of Children of a Lesser God, but he is not home to rest. Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater Company just opened Holler If You Hear Me, a musical based on the songs and poetry of Tupac Shakur. Mr. Leon joins us now, along with his longtime colleague and friend, Todd Kreidler. Welcome back to City Lights.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Well, great to have you here. Yeah. Now, the show began life on Broadway in 2014. Please take us back through its history.
Well, Holler If You Hear Me, we were on Broadway, and I must, I just dragged Todd along with me today because we were working on the show here in Atlanta. So I said, you're going on Lois's show with me, and we're just going to chat it up. So Todd probably can tell you the best arc to the beginning of that.
It was actually your fault. You brought this to me. Kenny was working with a producer that was interested in taking the music. And this producer, Eric Gold, had been working for a long time. In fact, I recall when I was working with August Wilson, he spoke to August about it. So it was it had a long gestation before even Kenny and then I got involved. And so it was Kenny who said, I'm doing this Tupac musical. And he goes, I think you should write it. And I said, really? I said, man, you could have anybody in the country write this. And you know, he can explain why he asked me to write it, but I can tell you the first thing I did, I was a fan of Tupac's, largely because of August.
I should add, you were August Wilson's dramaturg.
Correct, yes.
No small accomplishment, especially for a very young man.
Yes, and I was working with August on King Henry II about 16 years ago, and I had done six cities and had gone from Mr. Wilson to August over that time, and we were arriving on Broadway and early in rehearsals, we were having breakfast, and we were talking about Tupac came up, and August said, he said, man, you know, Tupac's song, Dear Mama, man, you know, he said, man, about his mother and blah, 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 and he says, man, by the look of you, man, you don't know the song, and I said, yeah, August, I know the song. He said, no, man, but you don't really know what I'm talking about, man, you don't really know it, and he got upset. He's like, you don't know Dear Mama, so we were at the Edison Cafe, and he jumped up, paid the bill, bolted out the door, crossed the street was Virgin Records. He went downstairs, didn't say another word to me, flipped through the CDs, grabbed a CD, checked out. We walked out the door, and he handed me Tupac's Me Against the World. And I said, thanks, August. I appreciate this. He still didn't say anything to me. I said, thanks, man. So then we started to walk to rehearsal, and in walking to rehearsal, we walked past the hotel, the Edison Hotel, and he stopped. And he looked at me and said, where are you going? I said, man, we got rehearsal at second stage. This is Broadway. I mean, I couldn't wait to get to rehearsal, you know? And he goes, no, man, you're not going anywhere, man. He said, man, you go up to your room, man, and you listen to that music, man. I don't want to see your face, man, until you listen to that music, because there's nothing in your life that's not contained in that music. He's like, that will touch every aspect, from your ideas about love and politics and your family. And he said, there's a whole world in that music, man. I want you to find that out before you come back to rehearsal. So I diligently went up to my room, you know, room 749 at the Edison Hotel. And I was a Sony Discman, right? This is 2001, no iPod yet. And I diligently listened to Me Against the World about 10 times. And so if you fast forward from that moment, 7 or 8 years later, Kenny Leon has me doing this musical. I get a FedEx box with 21 CDs, a book of poetry, and go write a musical using Tupac's music and lyrics. I took out my yellow tablet, and the first thing I wrote down is, Dear Mama will be in this musical. That's all I knew about
this
thing.
Well, we have a clip. Let's listen to a little bit of it now.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the streets. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, I'm scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Shed tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. In elementary, hey, I see the penitentiary one day, running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen. Mama, I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand.
The plan is to show you I'll understand. So you've got this universe in these lyrics that August Wilson made sure you understood, Todd.
You know, it was just to tie to August Wilson and to Tupac. I think when I started True Colors Theater Company in Atlanta, one of the first people that I was talking to at the time was Afeni Shakur, which was Tupac's mother, and she was thinking about building an art center here to honor her son. And she reached out to me, and she wanted my advice. She kind of wanted me to help to start the art center, but I was starting True Colors at the same time, and I said, well, I'll just work with you as a consultant on this idea. And through that experience, we became really good friends and talked about the idea of, you know, if her son's catalog would eventually become a Broadway musical. And I said, yeah, I don't think it could be autobiographical. I think it should focus on his artistry. And she said, absolutely, because he wrote every single day, you know.
He was a poet.
And he was brilliant. And like someone said to me, you know, there was Dr. King and there's Tupac. Not to offend anyone, but Tupac and Dr. King, they were doing the same thing. They just had different audiences. You know, and when I look at it that way, it's like he had something to say, and he was writing about the people around him. And we were working on Radio Golf for Broadway, and I needed a song at the end of the play because the main character leaves his political career to devote it to his community. And I wanted the song Me Against the World, a song by Tupac. And, you know, of course, the music industry is like, oh, no, that'll be millions of dollars. You know? And so I reached out to Afeni, and she's like, she made it possible for us to do that with no charge. So the last song that you hear in our production of Radio Golf on Broadway is Tupac's Me Against the World as the lead character joins the community.
Now, Kenny, are you still in touch with her?
She passed away last year.
She passed away.
Yeah, she was great. So we do this, and you know, she was there for the Broadway production, and basically with tears in her eyes, and you know, you guys did my boy right, and that means a lot. So you know, to do it again in Atlanta after a relatively short run in New York, it was great to have an opportunity to introduce the play to a wider audience. And as we are finding out through the previews, I mean, we had packed houses last night and the night before, people, a diverse group of people, find this to be touching, moving, powerful, life-changing. And in many ways, it's more timely today than it was when we did it on Broadway.
Yeah.
And people are shouting and screaming. And I also encourage people to get their tickets, just because we're gonna have to close it October 8th, and it's just one of those. It's probably my best directorial work to date, and I've done a lot of a lot of things. So I've done Broadway, I've done live musicals, television events, but this is really meaningful. We've also integrated the students from Atlanta University Center. So we have professional actors. We have young people in the play who wrote their own poetry that we've integrated that at the end to complement Tupac's poetry and his songs, you know. So it's really a musical fable about peace in the world. And it's you know, and it's beautiful, and it's using all of the Tupac's lyrics that he left us, but we've constructed in a way, and Todd has done a brilliant job of putting these words in the mouths of everyday people. So he put those words in the mouth, dear mama, in the mouth of a son that's struggling with life, but he loves his mother, you know. He put the words of me against the world in the mouths of two people who are in love. And where the man is feeling like it's I'm just fighting this along, and she reminds me, you got me, I'm fighting it with you, you know. So it's really a universal piece. Matthew Head, who does all the music for Oprah's network on Greenleaf, he's composing the music. Jarrett Grimes, who is the best tap dancer in the world and an extraordinary choreographer, is choreographing some dope choreography. So it's really just this is a musical that has everything.
Well, Todd, you wrote the book for the musical in 2014. It is not a biography.
No.
Tupac. Tell us about the storyline.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that was, as Kenny said, it was important to Afeni, and I think Kenny and I arrived at that independently because I recall hearing about wanting to do his story, and I know a lot of people come to thinking of that, and I personally was like, you know, I didn't find that personally interesting, and I, for many reasons, because I thought when you get into Tupac's life, you get overwhelmed by East Coast, West Coast, and the end of his life and the controversy, and I felt like that consumed what I think is the moral philosophy that's embedded in the work, and he shares that with August. So I wanted to bring that to light. I wanted to bring the ideas and attitudes and the, quote, contradictions he was always accused of was perfect dramatic material for me because I put that in the mouths of different characters. So the story is about a friendship. So it's a friendship. A man returns to his community after being imprisoned for 6 years for killing someone. And he returns back to the community. He wants to leave all of his old life behind. And he has, you know, he's estranged from his girlfriend, from his best friend. And then there's a new friendship born. So it's all about, you know, there's a level that it's all about, instead of setting this in Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Cleveland, I did say it was the Midwest because I wanted it no East Coast, no West Coast, but really it's set on a place we call our block, which is our fabled, you know, post-industrial, you know, city neighborhood. And we use songs like You Heard Dear Mama, where my plan is to show you that I understand. There's a whole storyline with, as Kenny said, a character who plans to show his mother he understands what she just, you know, share with him. So that's how the whole thing, it's a big story, but I think it centers around the friendship and the possibility of change.
Since 2014, when the show opened on Broadway, brutality and deaths multiplied in Ferguson and beyond, along with the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement. So now in 2017, has the message of this play intensified?
Yeah, I think, one thing I like to keep straight is like, this play is not just dealing with those issues that are confronted by groups like Black Lives Matter, and it's not just about police treatment of black men. It's really a fable that embraces universal themes. You know, it's about one's need to be loved. One needs to have love from parents. It's about love and community. It's about saving the next generation to make this a peaceful planet. So all those type of issues hit us today in terms of the political climate, the social climate. It's like, you know, this earth, you know, if we don't take care of it, it won't be around. And we have to take care of it in a lot of different ways. You know, the earth itself, and then the people in it and how we relate to each other. It's a musical reminding us all that if we connect to the love, it's a much better planet.
If you're just joining us, this is City Lights. Our guests are director Kenny Leon and Todd Kreidler, who was dramaturg to August Wilson, associate artistic director at True Colors. They'll tell us more about the Tupac musical Holler If You Hear Me after a short break.
Support for WABE comes from UGA's Terry College of Business, host of the Terry Third Thursday Breakfast Speaker Series at Terry College's Buckhead Center. September 21st speaker is Clarence Gooden, former president of CSX, terry.uga.edu. And from Comcast Business. Comcast is building a gig speed network providing small businesses across the country with the opportunity to dream gig. Learn more at dreamgig.com. Comcast Business, built for business.
This is City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes here with Kenny Leon and Todd Kreidler. Atlanta-based True Colors Theater Company is performing Holler If You Hear Me, a musical based on the songs and poetry of rapper Tupac Shakur. What do you think it is about Tupac's lyrics that rise above what we typically think of as gangster rap and that could inspire a Broadway musical? Because there are people who, you know, just may be superficially acquainted that may have a different impression.
Well, I love that audience. In fact, from the whole title of the show to me, Holler If You Hear Me, is about taking the music to some people, for some of our audience, from Holler to Hear Me. It's about that. I mean, that's exactly, was one of the, you know, as I told Kenny, sort of my imaginary audience was, you know, Ms. Shakur was always in my audience, but next to her was my mother, who, you know, had to Google Tupac when I took this on. She knew zero, zip, nothing. And to see her during one of our first workshops, to be just blown away by the power of his work. And now she's a fan, and, you know, and she sees the world different because of being exposed to this music. And wow. I say that if you want to look at the density, the content, it's you really have to start comparing him with Shakespeare. And certainly that's how I treated the material. I worked very hard to not cut and make it a pastiche to fit my story. I tried to work inside out. So I tried very hard to grow all of the storylines and all of the elements from inside the lyrics out. And when I did make some minor cuts, it was just cutting out biographical material because I didn't want to reference his life or specific instances. But lyrically, it stands apart because I can tell you when I first did this, the first thing I did was those 21 CDs, I printed up all the lyrics, and I had two phone book size, if people remember phone books, size binders of his lyrics, hundreds of songs, 300 or 400 songs and 400 poems. And it was funny, some of his songs, you would have other MCs, other lyricists, and I got to where I could glance and I could immediately, no disrespect to the other folks that did songs with him, but I could immediately distinguish the lyrics because the dexterity and the depth and the, you know, the use of dialectic is amazing. It's totally a standout. I think he stands heads above, you know, and I'm I love the art form outside of him, but I feel like, again, he's sort of like the Shakespeare to the art form. It's
well, let's hear a little bit of the title song. We have a clip, a slightly edited clip of Holler If You Hear Me. It's got to be FCC friendly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Holler If You Hear Me. Here we go, turn it up, let it start. From block to block, we're snatching hearts and jacking marks. And the punk police can't fake me a minute. We can have peace someday, G. But right now I got my mind set up. Look at that, I'm dead up. Cause it's time to make the payback back to my brothers on the block. Better stay black and accept no substitutes. I bring truth to the youth, tear the roof of the whole school. Home though, I'm gonna turn the other cheek. In case you can't see us when we burn the other week. Until then, raise
a rallying cry, to say the least.
You know, Rob Demery, Atlanta actor.
I got to tell you, I was so excited when I saw he was in this cast because Fetch Clay Make Man was one of my favorite True Colors productions. And that actor was Muhammad Ali. He is extraordinary. And he plays John, the lead.
He's the lead character. He's really incredible.
He's phenomenal. He's amazing.
D. Woods is in it. And was
Garrett.
Garrett, Rob. It's a great ensemble, you know. It's a great ensemble.
You mentioned your producer, Eric Gold, for the Broadway show. He has said that you were just in the wrong moment for Holler, if you hear me. This thing called Hamilton came along in 2015, you know, making good use of rap. And what do you hope for this show now? Now, is this your moment?
Well, I think there are no accidents in life. You know, I feel like it's like Harry Belafonte said to me, he said, you have to remember you're presenting Afrocentric work on a Eurocentric stage when you do things on Broadway. And, you know, and Ben, I'm on the Tony Administration Committee, so I love the Broadway community. I'm a part of that community. But we still have a long way to go in terms of diversity and inclusion. That's just a part of it. And I'm one of the biggest fans of Hamilton, you know, and it's great. But Hamilton is a much easier story for America to embrace. You know, you're dealing with the lyrics of Tupac Shakur. Sometimes it's a lightning rod for different groups, you know. So we still have some racism in America and a clash of cultures, you know. So I thought that our time for this play on Broadway, it was when it was supposed to be there, and it ran the length of time it was supposed to be there. Now we have an opportunity to give it to a larger audience. We were saying the other day, like Saul Williams played it in New York, and he has sort of officially stamped this production. You know, Saul Williams, a great, amazing American poet, you know, so he's connected to it. And I connected the cast from the Broadway production with the cast here. So there's a synergy between those groups of people. So we're supposed to. And I think after this production, I think the life of the play will be even bigger. So I think you'll probably see this somewhere else, either in other cities or either on the movie screen or somewhere.
Kenny Leon is a Tony Award-winning director, actor, golfer, and founder of True Colors Theater Company. Todd Kreidler is dramaturg par excellence, writer, and surprise guest this morning.
Absolutely. Amazing writer.
Holler, if you hear me, is playing at the Southwest Fulton Arts Center through October 8th. It's such a joy to hear you speak with passion for what's on stage and your belief in the power of theater to bring us all together.
Absolutely. Come soon. Come soon. Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lois.
You've been listening to City Lights. You can catch an encore broadcast tonight at 8. Our producers are Aaron Wright, Gabby Watts, and Mike Johns. Kevin Rinker is our engineer. I'm Lois Reitzes. I'd love it if you follow me on Twitter at LOISREITZES. The station's at WABE News. Thanks for joining us and for listening to WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.